Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
MotoGP is in hibernation after the conclusion of the 2022 season and the quite eventful postseason test in Valencia, but we are cracking off in the offseason while obviously recharging our batteries a little bit. First on our list is an interview with somebody on the current grid that we really enjoyed having on and talking to, VR46 Ducati rider Luca Marini. Luca finished 12th this season. He took a streak of finishing races quite far into the season until his first retirement, which was a technical issue, although he also crashed and remounted a couple of races before, so maybe doesn't deserve too much credit. But yeah, you also obviously may know him as Valentino Rossi's half-brother. Never been quite comfortable with the phrase half-brother. I don't know what it's supposed to mean. Like, he's his brother, right? We can just say brother.
Yeah, we can say brother.
Yeah. Yeah, Valentino Rossi's brother, Luca Marini. We did not have him on because he's Valentino Rossi's brother, but because he's a really enjoyable person to talk to. And though Rossi comes up, I think you'll enjoy this interview even without all the VR46 stuff. Is that right, Simon?
Yeah, absolutely it is. At the end of the day, we don't have guests on the podcast very often. And when we do, they're normally ones that are well-picked for their expressiveness. And Luca, we asked to come on the podcast because he's an intelligent guy, because he says clever things. You know, lots of journalists have made the comparison, especially in the latter half of the season, that he's kind of become the new Andrea Dovizioso, as the person that you go to get to explain complicated things about MotoGP to you, because he's really good at it. And I think that really comes across in the interview you're about to hear. I think that he displays how carefully he thinks about everything, and he explains a lot of complicated things very easily to schmucks like you and I.
Schmucks, that's my word. Find your own word. Yeah, so without further ado, let's hand it back to past versions of Simon and myself, arguably ones with more energy in the tank, but we'll see.
I don't know, come Valencia, I was pretty drained.
All right, yeah.
I feel like after a week off, we're in a better state. But anyway, enough about us. On to Luca Marini.
On to Luca Marini. Our guest today, Luca Marini, VR46 Ducati. Luca has finished his first 36 races as a MotoGP rider before finally retiring at Sepang. How do you feel about that streak, Luca? Because I think, on the one hand, really, really impressive, and I'm not sure anybody else has ever done that. I've not checked, but Yeah, I have to check.
Nah, check. Yeah. Check it, please. I'm curious.
On the other hand, you know, some riders will tell you that, like, you need to crash to know when you crash. How do you feel about that? Did you feel like it's good to stay on at all costs, or did you at any point go, oh, it's weird that I haven't crashed in a race yet? Because you still have, well, you have in Thailand, but, you know.
Sincerely, not not both condition situation. It's not weird, but it's not try to don't crash at all cost. I try to go at the limit, push at the limit every time. Many times nearly to crash and maybe saving a big closing in the front. It can happen. But is that just that I have a good feeling with the front tire. I feel it very well. And I try to go on the limit. And I try to understand during practice and qualifying where is the limit. So sometimes it happens that I crash. But when I arrive at the race, more or less I know in which point I can be a little bit more aggressive, risk a little bit more, or try to avoid any mistakes. For example, here we have turn four, that every time it's cold the tire on turn four, so we need to be a little bit more clever in that corner, but in all the other lap, push at the limit from the first lap and try to do your best performance every time. And for me, when you can finish a race, you gain a lot of more experience. You understand a lot of things because during practice, you never have the opportunity for make so many laps in a row. One, because it's very difficult physically. And second, also because you don't have time. You need to try different things and the practice time is not enough.
We know that you spend maybe more time than most riders really studying the data, studying all the information you have. Do you think that helps you to know when you can push and when you don't have to push? Because you have so much more information maybe than someone who gets off the bike and leaves the garage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think yes. This is something that I like to do. I like to speak a lot with my data engineer, but also with Idalio Gavira, that is our rider coach, is one of very important figure for me. We know very well every corner of the track. I try to spend a lot of time on like overtaking of spots or the first few laps of the race, that is a critical part of the race. Try to understand how you need to manage that critical situation and try to do your best results. I know that maybe it's easier going just out of the garage and push at 100%. Sometimes I do it. For example, when you do a qualifying lap, you need to switch off the brain and just give 100% and one extra every time. So also I'm able to do this when there is the occasion to do it.
Do you think this is this your natural style, or is this something that maybe you've learned? Because we see the same, you know, we've just spoken to Jack Miller and he described Pecco as a calculator. So maybe it's something that, you know, is it something that the academy guys have because you study it from each other, or is it something that comes naturally?
Yes. Also, myself is natural because also in my life, it's like every time like this, and my girlfriend every time tell me these things on different situation, but trust me, it's like this every time. But yeah, we saw Vale in the past years when we were younger inside of the box working a lot until late night, and I think that he pass this method to us. And also when we train at home, it's more or less like this because we finish one run, but then we start to speak on the technical side for how to improve, giving us advices each other. In some sport, I'm better than the other, so in other sport, I'm worse. So like when we train with WinGP, with Ovale, yeah. Celestino is the strongest. So I try to ask him some advices, something, try to look at him, try to improve because I want to beat him. Or when we go to the ranch, that I'm the strongest, every time they can ask me advices, We speak about the setting of the bike, the lines, something like this, and we try to improve because everybody wants to win, and we want to beat the other rider.
You brought up the academy. This is maybe going to be like a weird sounding question, but just as a structure, how much of your life would you say in terms of percentage do you spend in some way adjacent to the academy, like training, talking to them, like. Is it a family? Is it a job? Is it a family job? Do you guys speak on WhatsApp about TV shows that you watch? Do you guys only train together and then go away and never talk to each other? How does it work?
No. We spent a lot of time together. It's not just training together. We are a group of friends. And we talk about everything, like serie TV, Netflix, or other sports. Or watching together F1, or playing video games together. We are first of all a friends group, and then a group of a training group, and then competitors on track. So I think that we were managing this situation really well in these years, because it's not easy. Especially when you arrive at in MotoGP, because everything is different in MotoGP. But we are doing great, and I hope that can keep going like this. But also, I hope that will be a little bit worse, because when the relationship is more difficult, it's a sign that you are fighting for the victory. So it's good also have this.
That was exactly what I was going to ask. And just, you know, generally, so much success for the system, but it also means that more and more VR46 brand riders are coming to MotoGP, and you're one of them, and there's a VR46 team with just two rides. So, that, you know, you're all good friends, but you're also all fighting for your dream, basically. And it's even, I guess, even weirder than in a normal team scenario of just being friends with your teammate.
Yes, much more weird. Yeah, it's very difficult situation, but fortunately we are everybody is really smart and clever to understand this situation, and we want to keep it clean and normal when we are at home in the best way. And I think that when you are not fighting for the victory, it's easier. But if in next years will be that more riders can compete for the victory against Pecco, me, Bez, and also Franco, because I think that all of four of us we can win in MotoGP, will be more difficult, because this is the life, this is the human behavior, and is something impossible. In something so important for your life, it's not just your career, it's changing your life. So just to be smart and try to keep the relationship in the best way within clever people.
You've kind of answered what I was going to ask, but it seems like one of the things that's important to be in the academy is to be smart, to be intelligent, because you look at the guys who are there, and you're all, you know, the guys I would say are the most intelligent in MotoGP.
This is good. I think it can be like this. It's just not that you have to be intelligent, but you have to grow. You have to understand, learn, and improve yourself also on the human side, not just only as a rider. This also academy teach to us. This is not one people that is teaching, but the experience shared make us improve.
Because I think you do things that no one else does in racing to help grow. Because I know that you've had some weekends like visiting art museums with Aldo Drudy.
Yeah.
You know, that's not anything to do with racing, but it helps maybe make you a better, stronger person.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like this. It's have a good time also out of the track, but with a feeling of competition every time, every day. This is nice.
So did you already, like earlier in the season, did you already get the like the proper feel for the VR46 Academy competition, I guess, in the, because what I'm trying to say is you had a difficult start with the new Ducati, like pretty much everyone. It was not the easiest bike. Marco had a really good start with the old bike, and Celestino was doing really, really well in Moto 2. Was there any point for you where you were like, guys, slow down, please?
No.
Give me time to...
No, never. At the end, I'm really happy when the other guys from the academy, but in general, Italian riders can achieve good results, because I think that is nice for our nation, for our sport, and give me bigger motivation when I saw them achieve good results, like Pecco did this year. He made an amazing season, demonstrating that he was the strongest this season. So it's nice be close to him and saw him working every day for arrived at this target, for arrived at fighting for the winning the championship.
How different would the situation be for Italian riders without the academy? Because Italy is doing very well at the minute, but mainly academy.
Yes, but I think there are also negative aspects to be in the academy. Eh? There is not, it's never all positive, but in all the situation. So I think that also the other riders outside of the academy, they are doing a great job. Enea improved a lot in these years. Also Arbolino made an amazing job, and now he's one of the strongest in Moto2. And but I think that they are looking at us, and they keep us as a target, try to beat us because they want to demonstrate that they are better. But this is nice because we have our men to beat every year inside of us, so we can focus on just ourselves and try to push behind our limits. But we are also a good motivation for the riders outside of the academy.
I have to ask, you said some negatives to being in the academy. Are you talking just the overall view of it? Because obviously you enjoy life within VR46, but I mean, what do you see as the negatives? Can you tell us?
No, it's impossible to tell.
Will you tell Valentino Rossi what the negatives are?
yeah, sure. Every more or less every year we have like a meeting all together, speaking on what we can improve. Because if you look behind, we made an amazing step forward within the academy. It was not so easy or nice how it is now. We struggle in some situation. We need to adapt. We need to change the system sometimes. But I'm really, really satisfied how it works now. And also people that are working in the academy, they make a good job, because it's not easy follow and manage so many riders, so many fast riders especially.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Val, what do you want to move on to?
Wait. That sounds really blunt. Wait.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah. Perfect. I really like this topic.
We talked about it in Sepang with you. And then since then, it's become a real topic in World Superbikes as well. Yeah. And it seems like there are a lot of people who agree with what you think.
Fantastic. This makes me really happy. Yeah. Every time I say it's something not for making a disadvantage for a smallest rider, is just to be more fair. And looking at the answer that Alvaro made to this topic, comes to my mind that is not correct, because he said that people rider with more weight has also more strength, but this is not correct, because we need to work on low our weight, so we cannot work on the strength, and we need to find the correct balance to have the enough strength for riding the bike for 45 minutes, yeah, but the weight as less as possible for, especially for the rear tire.
Yes.
For the wear of the rear tire, because now the level is so high, the acceleration of the bike with the horsepower is not a problem now, but there are few aspects like the rear tire temperature and the rear tire wear that is something clear, something about physics. It's not just an idea. We have the data. Ducati have data to explain this. And just try to make this sport even more fair, even more spectacular for everybody. And I think that also for the smallest rider, it will be not a problem. Put 2-3 kilos more on their body, trying to work more on their strength, on their resistance, for make even better performance. So it's not to make a minimum weight so high, impossible to arrive to them. Yes. It's just to make an average. And they can put a little bit more weight on their body, just working a little bit more on the gym. While it's impossible for us, go lower with the weight. Yeah. Because I tried to go lower also when I was in Moto2, also last year. But after 68 kilos less, I don't have the strength for make the race. Okay. So I need to stay around 70. I can do it, but it's... then it's worst for the bike.
Yeah.
Low, I can do for safety reason,
yeah,
because I don't have enough energy for finish the race.
So would you say, because I remember it was a thing in Formula One, would you say it's also a thing in motorcycle racing, that some riders are having to eat unhealthy basically, so not eat as much as they should to keep their weight competitive? Have you encountered that much?
Depends on what you want. If you want to try go as low as possible, you don't eat. It's not safety is something also dangerous, But I don't know if in your mind the problem in that moment is that one. You want to do everything for achieve your best result because this is your life. This is the most important thing for us. And if you need to, for example, Moto3 riders that are really, really tall, they do these kind of things in the during the weekend. Mm-hmm. They just eat like this of fries. And just they make the race like this. Okay, Moto3 is less stressful on physical side. But in MotoGP is impossible to do this. So go lower on my minimum weight is impossible to go. So put a minimum weight that is average, not so high, will be important for everybody. And will be fair.
So the other sport that I love watching is cycling. And a few years ago, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, they were all trying to be as light as possible as well. And then in the end, they found that the climbers especially were missing days of racing because they got sick all the time. Mm-hmm. They were always getting colds and flus, food poisoning, because their bodies were weaker. Was it the same for you when you were trying to keep the weight low?
Exactly. It's like this. It's like this. It's, the human body needs to have enough calories for energy for make a performance. Yeah. You need enough energy, no? But you want to go low on your weight, so this is the aspect. But now also they saw in cycling that taller cyclists are better now because they can have more power.
Exactly,
the kilowatt of is more. So in my opinion, also for the rider that are really short and with less weight, they can put a little bit more weight just. Train more, eat more, and the level will be the same. While now, also the smallest rider are trying to keep their weight low.
Yes.
Because they want to use their advantage. It's correct. But for them, put more kilos will be just something better, in my opinion.
Just going back to what Álvaro Bautista said, do you have any sympathy to the argument that, you know, for the shorter riders, it's harder to warm their tires in the wet and all that? And just generally that sometimes in sports, there is an optimal body build. Like he said, obviously, the, you know, basketball. If you're not tall enough, you can't really do it. Even the, like you look at Steph Curry, he looks very small when he plays basketball. He's a 1.90 meters.
Yeah, no,
he's not small at all. do you have any sympathy for that? Or is it just, you know, obviously for you, you want to be in this sport and you don't want the fact that you're a bit taller than some people to compromise your life's work. So I guess that's the main feeling for you in this regard. How sympathetic are you to the other side?
I start saying that what Álvaro say is correct. With less weight, it's more difficult to put the temperature on the tires. But first of all, wet condition,
rare,
cold,
yeah,
happens just one or two times, and not in the race. Maybe FP3 in the morning, warm up, can happen, yes. And then for them is a disadvantage, sure. But maybe if they put more weight on themselves and put some kilos on the bike, they solve the problem. So this argument never—it's not correct to speak about this because at the end, the race are every time on dry condition because the calendar is made also for have the better condition in every country. So yeah, it's correct. With less weight, it's more difficult to put temperature on the tires, but the cold condition and wet condition. Never happens. And if they put 5 kilos more, they will have the temperature in the tires. So 3 on the body, 2 on the bike. Perfect. And about my life in general, I'm really happy to be tall because I'm more beautiful than the other riders. So it's fantastic. Thinking that when I will not be a MotoGP rider, I go at home and look at the mirror and I said, okay, I struggled, yes, but wow, I'm beautiful and I can be an actor or a model for the future and It's not a problem. So fantastic.
For sure, one of the best things about being a MotoGP rider now is that you get to fly business class and not an economy with the legs.
this is something that changed your life. Change your life. But there are mechanics higher than me and flying in economy, and for them is really, really difficult. So yeah, we are lucky to fly in business.
Looking back to the start of your career, you didn't do so much Moto 3, more Moto 2 in different paddocks. Is that in part because of your size?
Yeah, and only for this.
Okay.
Yeah, only for this. I remember very well the moment that Vale told me, you go to Moto 2. You need to go to Moto 2. And I said, no, I like Moto 3. I want to be a Moto 3 World Championship 1 year. But there was Balda with the team Gresini that year that he made 1 year of Moto 3, but he was already tall and he struggled a lot in the World Championship. And he make to me this example, and he said, trust me, go in Moto 2. In fact, it was the very good idea with the Moto 2 bike. Was everything easier for me, because I remember last year in Moto 3, I grew up like more 10 centimeters, even more. So last year it was impossible to stay in the bike. Was really, really good opportunity for me competing in the European Championship for one season. And the feeling with the Moto2 bike was everything more natural and more easy for me.
Yeah, so when you say Moto3, you mean the Spanish Championship, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you think we'll see more people taking this route in the future?
Yeah.
Already this year, there's been
also Salas now.
Yes.
Salas this year is achieving really, really great result, and last year struggled too much with the Moto3. I don't know also, but it's difficult to find the place in Moto2 now. Also, Carlos Tatai is really tall for a Moto3, and for me, he's a good rider looking from the TV. He can have a good potential, but keep going in Moto3 is not it's not easy for them, because smaller riders are more aerodynamics. Even if you stay low with your weight, the bike is so small that it's impossible to ride for a taller rider. So sometimes can be also an option pass through the European Championship with the Moto2, like Alonso Lopez did.
Yeah.
In my opinion, in the future, riders need to think on this idea. Because if you win races in European Championship, you find the way to go to pass through the Moto2 World Championship. It's much easier win races in Moto2 World Championship, in European Championship, than fight for the victory in Moto3 World Championship. Because Moto3, the level is high, and the weight and the height of the riders make the difference.
And the way we've seen Moto3 the last few years with these big crazy packs, where maybe not the fastest guys are the guys coming out on top, lots of dangerous moves. You know, I know that like Minho has spoken a lot about it and how he feels about it. Do you think that you don't really miss anything by not being in Moto3 for that year?
Yes.
Apart from maybe to learn the tracks that we go to.
I missed a lot. Moto3 is a difficult category, but you learn a lot. Okay. You learn a lot that this is a jungle, this is everybody's crazy in track. Moto3, Moto2, MotoGP, trust me, everybody's crazy. Just that in MotoGP, everybody is more smart, clever, and understand better the situation and the risk. But you learn a lot in Moto3, and in my opinion, it's very, very propedeutic category. Maybe a little bit too easy. I would like to see the strongest riders win or fight for the podium in every race, while sometimes happen that also slower riders are there. But this year, Guevara made an amazing job, and he demonstrated that if you work alone, if you work well and you are strong, you have talent, you can stay alone and make your qualifying alone, and doesn't matter how you start, because if you have the pace, you can go forward and go away. So this, in my opinion, all the other riders need to look at him.
Luca, you said MotoGP is calmer. You've ridden a lot at the front this year. You've had a lot of time at or near the back last year. Mm-hmm. I think there's a perception within many MotoGP riders that at the front it's calm, but at the back, which the TV viewers don't see, it's just total mayhem, crazy
jungle.
Yeah, is it?
It's a mess. It's a chaos. It's incredible. Something incredible. But in all the categories like this, but the TV stay in the front. But trust me, if you have another camera just following the back, the show is incredible in all the three categories.
Why don't you guys go to the Dorn and say, hey, do picture in picture, show the madness in the second part?
Because, I don't know, they want to... It's more interesting the front. It's okay. More interesting the victory than the fight for the 14. But trust me, fighting for the 14 teach you a lot of things.
So one of the reasons that we asked you to come on the podcast, we don't normally have many rider guests, but one of the reasons we asked is because we know that you give really good answers. I think all of the Media Center love you this year, especially as you know, without Valle, without Dovi, who were normally these guys that give us good, honest answers. Does it sometimes get you in trouble, or
no,
for speaking your mind? For speaking your mind, for being honest with us? No?
No, never. Never, never. And I try to make my best also in the media debrief, because I want to improve. Paul break my balls every time because I need to be precise on the timing and try to be interesting for everybody. I like, because this is also part of myself, my character, and I want to let the people know better our sport. Is like one of my mission. I want to, this sport is incredible, and it's completely out of the world that MotoGP is going down with the viewers. Why? Now, this is, in my opinion, on track, the best moment of the MotoGP era, and it's impossible that people in all the world, in all the countries, doesn't understand this. So, it's part of our job, try to make the people fall in love with the sport another time. Is part of your job, and I think that together will be better for all of us, because there will be more money, more job for everybody, and everybody wants to earn more money. So this, in my opinion, is one of the points of the future. Make good results and make our sport see in all the country to more people, arrive to more people, a new generation.
Why we ask is not because we heard about you like getting in trouble or anything like that. It's just the more general, you know, you see riders growing up within big corporate structures and they get PR training basically every week. And I think this is not to besmirch PR or anything like that. This is not to be mean, but the goal of PR usually is coach the rider to say as much as possible without really saying anything, to where he generates the headlines that make it look like he's angry at somebody else, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I understand.
Have you brushed at all with that? Have you been given PR training, or were you just told, hey,
no,
be
never,
yourself?
Never.
It's working.
I think that it's in our sport is not so usual, no, this kind of thing. I think that riders are alone. This is not a sport team. We are alone, and we are here competing for one team, yes, but at the end, we are alone. So it's just something on what you want to do. Many riders doesn't want to do interviews, doesn't like media or something like this, because they don't have time, they don't want to improve on this side, or just they want focus on be strong in track, and then... piece off everything. For me, it's not correct. Communication is from when I was a child. My father told me that is very, very important every time. So I try to make my best for improve. And I would try to improve even more in the future with more project, try to arrive more to the new generation and to more people, because we'll be better for everybody, because our sports is one of the most beautiful sports in the world. And like I said before, it's out of the world that we don't have people in the grandstands in some circuit during the year. It's impossible.
Simon's given me the go for the final question. He's passed it over to me, so fair enough.
It's your question, Alex.
Yeah, it's a bit of a difficult one. As you and Alex Marquez have a certain thing in common, and this is a media-related question. You, I think, are the two MotoGP riders who have gotten asked the most about their brothers, maybe every other weekend or so. And as a media guy, I have to ask, is that annoying? Do you get tired of coming to a media session and sometimes, you know, somebody's asking you about Valentino Rossi? I mean, you're also a MotoGP rider. You probably, depends on how good the race was, but you probably want to talk about yourself.
I would not say that is annoying. This is not the correct word. I think that it's just our life. Vale is my brother. It's impossible don't talk about him. If other riders have another brother in the World Championship, they need to talk about their brothers. Like I need to talk about Pecco, because now he's fighting for maybe win the World Championship. So it's our job, is working like this, and it was never a problem for me. I'm really, really happy about my brother and my relationship with him, and what he did in this sport is incredible in the history and will remain for all the years in the future. And it's impossible don't talk about him, about he have done. So it's normal for me, and it's not bothering me. But I know that sometimes some kind of journalist is quite heavy on this topic, and maybe with them, yeah. At one point, I arrived to say I don't answer more, just talk to what or myself, because okay, 4 questions, 5 is okay, no problem, but 15 maybe is a little bit too much, so. Ask for make an interview with him, because I cannot answer to all these questions.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Lots of questions and lots of good answers. Pleasure to have you on the podcast with us.
Thank you so much, and see you next time I'm here.
Thanks, Luca.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
And that's the interview. It was recorded before the race weekend. It was recorded in Valencia, so we spoke to him at Valencia. I say we. Simon spoke to him at Valencia. I spoke to Simon and him through the magic of the internet. I was going to say the World Wide Web, but I'm not sure that applies.
Not quite that old.
Yeah. Thankfully, he didn't like either crash 15 bikes or win the race by 30 seconds in Valencia to sort of overwrite the whole narrative surrounding him. But yeah, Simon, some really insightful stuff. And I think part of what I appreciated was the acknowledgement of the interesting situation at VR46. And, you know, the fact that it is stacking more and more riders in MotoGP while also trying to remain this, you know, friendly family, but also getting increasingly professional. I think that's, you know, I think it's cool that Luca is also admitting this, that it's probably going to be a weird situation sooner rather than later, the more professional it gets. Because it's, you know, it's not even like the Red Bull Junior team or the KTM Academy or whatever. It's, you know, it's not supposed to be that corporate cutthroat thing, I guess, but it's going to have to be.
I mean, yeah, it's the first time we've heard a rider inside the VR46 Academy talk about the negatives of being inside the VR46 Academy as well as the positives. And I think Luca covered off both sides of it really well. But it's no secret that with him starting the season next year on his current 2022 bike, and with Marco Bezzecchi doing the same thing, with Pecco Bagnaia trying to defend a title, and with Franco Morbidelli hopefully getting back a bit of form and starting to look better in the latter half of the season with a new bike coming, there's potentially races where there's going to be four VR46 riders smashing each other out of the way at the front of a race, which is going to make Monday mornings at the ranch interesting. And that's a, you know, that's a new lesson that they're going to have to learn how to cope with and how to deal with. And I think getting a little bit of insight from Luca on kind of how on earth that's going to work was really, really good, really interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you're already a bit lucky this season dodging a small bullet in the fact that, you know, Franco, obviously none of them wanted Franco to be off form, but the fact that he was so off form made it so that he didn't sort of have to pick and choose between his Yamaha allegiances and his Rossi allegiances in the Fabio Quartararo Pecco Bagnaia title fight. But, you know, sooner or later, if the program keeps chugging along the way it does, something like that, it will come. And we will be incessantly talking about it because we're the media. That's what we do. Another interesting point, and, you know, obviously this was pretty high on the agenda because of some World Superbike discussions, but it also, you know, is relevant in MotoGP. Obviously, the weight situation, Luca being the tallest rider on the grid as per MotoGP.com data. I didn't measure all of them or anything, but,
he is from experience of standing next to them.
I think 3 centimeters over Joan Mir and some other guys. And, you know, the good news for him, I guess, is that in body type, he's a bit like me. He's really, I shouldn't say that because he's a MotoGP rider and I'm a schlub. So,
and also this is a podcast and people can't see how skinny you are.
No, that is true. Yes. Great audio content for everybody. need to like attach a picture to every copy that comes out, like Spotify, Apple, and we're not doing that. But yeah, it is an interesting point to hear him say it, because I think it is a discussion I don't have that strong of an opinion on, because I both see the let's just make it more even argument and the, you know, the desire to mitigate any sort of physical impact and to have it decided by, you know, skill and technology. But at the same time, the argument of, you know, well, you can't play basketball if you're not tall. Like, the history is of basketball, you can compare their heights, obviously. And if you're below 180, you have to be really specialized at something to make it there. Yeah, that's fair. And maybe it's fair to expect something similar in MotoGP. I mean, Luca, if the height's such a problem, he could be a below average height point guard in basketball. But yeah, but at the same time, I think one thing that we can all agree on is if that sort of thing prevents riders from eating unhealthy, like developing unhealthy habits and, you know, spending a lot of time sick, as you alluded to in their interview, obviously that would be a net positive generally.
Yeah, I think it was really good to get his view on it at a time when it's become a bit of a topical issue. And he obviously has strong views on it, but he's obviously thought about it quite a bit. And I'd imagine being around the VR46 Academy and hanging around with riders like Andrea Migno has kind of really helped him form a good opinion on both sides of the argument. It's a tricky question because I get his points, but I also get why manufacturers are perhaps a little bit against the concept of bringing in some sort of a minimum weight, or, you know, so yeah, it's not an ideal situation, but it's good to get the viewpoint on it. And it definitely, it's one of those chats that informs us going forwards as well, because it's not very often you get to spend so long, so in depth with a writer on a subject. And that's the glory of having these guys on the podcast. It also, of course, led to the single greatest line that anyone has ever uttered on our podcast whenever he told us that he was a beautiful Italian man.
Which, again, and this is the official position of the podcast. I can say it now because I'm acting as stand-in host. He is, in fact, a beautiful man. So you can you know, you can use that as a box quote or whatever on his Wikipedia page if you particularly want to. So the other bit that I really appreciated is, you know, what we like about Luca is he both, like, he's honest with us, but he understands that it's, you know, MotoGP needs interesting open personalities. And I think there's a realization from him that I think we also share, that the sport does not currently have the eyeballs that it warrants and deserves for one reason or another. And I don't think rider personalities are a particularly integral factor to that, but I do think that it's very conscious and admirable to see it as, you know, doing your part to help. Because he does get paid for it, but mostly he gets paid to be quick on the bike. So, you know, we appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, thanks to both him and the VR46 team, because I originally messaged to see if we could get Luca up here at some time over the winter break. And they came back to me and said, oh, he's going on holidays before the break. And obviously there's only one race left. It's the final race of the year. He's going to be super busy. And then 12 hours later, they came back to me again to say, actually, we can do it. We found an hour in a schedule at Valencia to do it. And they managed to get it squeezed in. So, you know, it's thoroughly appreciated both for him and the team, but it also shows how he actually cares about, you know, speaking about his role and getting out there and doing that, which, you know, is something we've covered at length, particularly actually recently around the whole Valentino Rossi legacy.
Absolutely.
And it's good to see that there are riders on the grid who get that, you know, part of their role is being a spokesperson and a role model in the sport.
And, you know, I don't think it should be every rider, because some of them are just kind of introverts, honestly, and that's okay. But if you're the sort of person who likes to chat, you know, it helps. It really helps.
Yeah.
It helps the sport, I think, if you tap into that. And then obviously the other side of that coin is you have to rely on the media to not then make a nonsense headline out of it and try to stir up a sort of a feud which isn't really there, which, you know, that's more of a consideration for us. And obviously something I can say for us that we try to be reasonable about it and very, you know, very honest and not try to make up things that aren't there, but also try to tell things that are there, even if they're not entirely always comfortable.
But it's also a lesson to any other writers that would like to come on our podcast in the future. The best way to not form a feud is to not speak to us for 2 minutes a day. It's to speak to us for an hour at a time, because then you get to explain your ideas.
Indeed. So that's, you know, I'm sure they're all listening.
That's the
right
takeaway.
So next up for the winter, we have a series of interviews with Tom Jojic. Am I saying that correctly? Tom Jojic coming up. Technical MotoGP interviews with Toby and Tom, and also Simon, I believe, might be on some of them. Not me, because I'm technologically just offensively stupid. So. Wouldn't be much of an input there, but yeah, and we'd very much like your questions to podcast@therace.com, your voice note questions for the technical episodes with Tom, but also general questions, because we quite like to do a general Q&A episode like we often sometimes do. So that's always a bunch of fun. And beyond that, expect our usual top tens. I don't know, Simon, if your top 10 is going to be the same as what you did on the website.
I would be surprised if it was, let's be honest.
Dear. Oh, dear.
And I'd be surprised if your top 10 and my top 10 are anything alike, Val.
Nah, I'm already cooking up some absolute garbage number one pick that people are going to absolutely hate. I'm not kidding when I say I have four candidates, and very annoyingly, because like before Valencia, I had my mind made up, and then Valencia kind of sort of changed it a little bit, which maybe one race in 20 shouldn't do. But look, we're all human. We'll see what we come up with. Yeah. Recency bias sucks, but what can you do?
Exactly. Exactly.
When you do content like this weekly.
When you have 21 races a year, you can't remember the 18th race whenever it comes to race 21. So
yeah, I can't even remember Valencia at this point. So yeah. Good expertise. Anyway, from myself, from Simon, from Toby, from Matt Beer, from our assorted guests, thank you for listening this year, and stay tuned for more stuff also this year. Don't know why I did a farewell there, but you know, goodbye.
The Athletic.